Jim Taylor back on the WRMJ Sports Line on this Saturday morning. Good to have you along. And we have a nice in-studio guest this morning and storied career locally covering prep sports, a lot of different sports in the Quad Cities area. Mark Nestler is from the Argus Dispatch, the sports editor there. Great to have him along with us this morning. I had a lot of talk already off the air in studio, and Mark was telling us the great story about how he started. First up, we say good morning. And,
well, you tweeted that I've been in newspaper business for 324 years, and I know you were rounding to the nearest 100.
Yeah. Well, take us back. I mean, it's a pretty impressive story. I think one of the great backdrops here is you were telling me an accounting student at Augustana.
I majored in accounting and worked at the worked at the Argus in 1973 when I was a senior in high school. But my first byline back then. Murray and Nolan Hurt, who were legends at the Argus, they were not that adept at keeping score. And, of course, being the math person that I am, they had me tally along and keep score for them. And then after the game was over, I handed them the books and the stats and went to the office and finished my job. Well, on this particular night, it was Alleman playing at Rock Island Fieldhouse, and Don Morris was going for, like, his 400th win or 300th. It was a landmark win, and Nolan was not there yet. And it was a foggy night, and there was travel problems. And I only lived, like walking distance probably from Rocky. And game time, and he's still not there. And I'm thinking, okay, what do I do now? He brings the book. So I didn't have a book. All I had was a pen. And so the fast thinker that I am, back then they had those megaphones of popcorn that they hawked in high school field houses. So I went quickly as they're singing the national anthem. Well, as they're doing the announcements, I get me a megaphone, take it up to that sky-high press box at Rock Island Fieldhouse, dump it out on the floor, and I keep score around the butter marks. So then after the game, Don Morris conducting interviews, and, of course, I've listened to the Hurt brothers interview coaches, but have never done it myself. So I kind of hung back and meekly kept notes on my popcorn box, standing back so I didn't see what I was writing on because I was embarrassed. Got back to the office and got my first byline the very next morning. I guess it was afternoon back then.
You were a student at Rock Island High School, right?
Right, and then Augustana College.
So some of your first responsibilities were like, what back in the day?
Oh,
and how did you?
How times have changed looking back to then, Jim. Back then, I don't know if you've seen All the President's Men, but they have those. Of course, everybody has, and they have those ticker tape machines. My job, ticker tape goes, they call it a ticker tape because there's a tape that comes with it that prints out as the machine's going and typing the words on the screen. My job was to take those tapes, roll them up, put a paper clip on them, and hang them on a hanger that was either NBA, baseball, whatever, colleges, and then mark them so that either Murray or Nolan could take it off the board and send it out to the room where they put it on the page. That was my job, to watch the ticker tape. And it's still exciting to hear that noise. When I watch that movie, I wait till the very end when I can hear that noise. That's the best part of the whole show.
Yeah, and that's why it's always great with the affiliation here being the Cardinal Radio Network. When Jack Buck was alive, he'd always say on the scoreboard show, "We'll check the ticker.
Check the ticker.
Back in a moment." What? What's he talking about?
That's it. That's it. I did that job.
What kind of? I mean, is it something when you were growing up that you said, I like to be around sports. I'd like to, see if I could get a job.
Another story that I tell. I substitute teach during the day. Before I go into work at the office at night, but I tell all the kids about how I said, set your dreams, set your goals. I said, when I was their age in junior high, I would tell my dad, I said, Dad, someday I want to be a sports editor, not just a sports writer. I told him I wanted to be a sports editor because I would, and I would go out and get the paper and I would bring it back in and I would just read the sports section. I would read all the scores on the scoreboard page. I would read all the stories. And so, I was just enamored by that and all that went into that. So then I went into college, and I'm thinking, newspaper people, I don't think they make very much money. I know those accounting people, they make a lot of money. And so I went into accounting at Augie, and as I'm there, I'm saying, do I really want to sit at a cubicle? Because I'm not, you know, I'm more of a people person than a numbers person. And so I worked at the Argus while I was in college, and by the time I got done, you know, I was heading in the direction of what I'm doing now.
And it's been 40 years, right?
It's been 41 years if you count part-time. I was hired full-time January 8th, 1978, so 37 years full-time, be 38 years in January.
Well, it all at the
all
Argus,
at the Argus. Well, the Dispatch, of course, when the Dispatch purchased the Argus and became one newspaper in the mid-90s, which I think is perfect for the Illinois side of the Quad Cities.
You know, and I think being in this business, in the media business, to me, it's a lot about continuing education in terms of learning. Don't think that you know everything.
Always.
Because I know covering sports, there's a lot of people that think they're experts. And even when I first got into this business, you think, well, man, I know everything. But it's a learning.
The best kind of writers are those that are sponges, those that watch how someone with more experience works, how they operate, the questions they ask, the way they write. Those that want to be a journalist. My big advice there is read everything you can. Read newspapers. Read online now. You have several opportunities to read. But back then it was read magazines, read newspapers. But read is the main thing.
And what did, you know, we talked a little bit about this off the air, kind of the advice you have for maybe some of the younger people out there contemplating whether it be print journalism, digital journalism, broadcast journalism, or whatever. You know, the one thing that always kind of, and I told you this, that aggravates me, do you know how to produce a story?
Yeah. I mean, you'd be surprised at college graduates that come in and interview for a full-time job that, you know, you ask them to produce some sort of a story for you to judge, or you read their clips, and you think, okay, this person needs some work. And the way to do that is to get your foot inside the door. The number of people that we place in full-time jobs from our part-time pool is incredible over the years. We got the sports editor in Macomb. We've got Kerry Patrick, who's... Yep. Who's, you know, stepped up the ladder. Chris Steele's in Geneseo. And we've even had ones, Michelle Dirk Lewis, who was a really good part-timer. She went down to the San Antonio AA baseball team. So I'm proud of that. But there's the number of people that the opportunity you get by being a part-timer in a real sports department is immense.
Well, let's talk about some of the things you've covered over the years. You know, I grew up, I was a graduate of all of them, and I grew up in the Metro Quad Cities. And, you know, when I talk to people from the Quad, like, for example, Scott Verstraete, whose dad was the late Whitey Verstraete, we get in these debates about who the best Western Big Six basketball team was ever. And my argument will always be, I say the 1979 UT Panthers, coached by Cliff Talley with Officer,
yes,
and Hunter, and that team, Brent Carmichael played on that team. Troy Mayfield, I tell everybody they were the original Phi Slamma Jamma back in the 1970s. They
Calvin Stamp?
Yeah, they didn't win state. But I look back at that era of kind of, and maybe it was just because of the age I was, the personalities of those coaches in the Big Six at that time, because Liggett was down at Quincy,
yeah,
and you had Coach Morris still at Allaman, you had Talley at UT, Whitey Verstraete was at Moline, and that was, I think, pre-Reed a couple of years. He came in the
right.
early 80s, but I don't know what. Well, when then, you look back at some of the those eras of covering, like the Big Six and the Metro Quad Cities.
Well, yeah, and I go a little. That was just a little bit. Cliff Talley was a little bit before my time. I did get Jerry Leggett when he was at Rock Island and at Moline, and not so much at Quincy. A little bit. Frank Dexter at Moline, and Barry Swanson at Galesburg.
Yeah.
That core of coaches was very unique in their own way, in which. Really, unlike the coaches now, they really think about what they want to say when they're being interviewed after a game or before a game.
And you think a lot of that is because of the political correctness of not worrying to offend a school board member,
I think back then it was trying to have an upper hand on being who you were.
Oh, I
mean, if you Duncan Reed was notorious for making reporters tearful. And I can, you know, there was one kid that called him and as a veteran writer at the time, we kind of enjoyed the way that he toyed with new reporters. And we had a new reporter that called him up prior to a Thanksgiving tournament. And he got done with the interview, and he was just, you know, really upset by the whole interview because, you know, every other time Duncan would say, well, that's a stupid bleeping question, and then he wouldn't answer, and you have to come up with a different one. So anyway, he gets done with the interview and hangs up, and he says, man, that was tough. And I said, well, who's Rock Island's point guard going to be for the Thanksgiving tournament? Because they had three, knowing some background there, I knew they had a choice of three.
Yeah.
And he goes, I don't know. I didn't ask him. And I said, well, that's got to be your story. I said, you're going to have to call him. Do I have to call him back? I said, yeah, you're going to have to call him back. And so, yeah, I was, in a little way, I was toying with him. But in another way, I knew what the story had to be. But it was awfully, you laugh and look back and say,
You told him. Then I'll let you tell the story on Reed again. You said you drove the
bus. Oh, yeah, I had my own adventure with Duncan Reed. As a matter of fact,
he enticed you to write.
He enticed me to write. It was a trip to Quincy, and you know that's always a rough trip. Mm-hmm. It's you know, basically 3 hours in cold weather and sometimes bad roads. And he said, you know what, Ness, why don't you ride the Rocky bus with us? And that'll save you the travel. And I thought, you know what? Save the company some money. Not a bad idea. I said, my only concern is, will I be able to finish my story and send it? Because back then, we had these radio shacks where you had those couplers. And I know people nowadays probably don't even know that they had phones with rotary dials. But you had to put these couplers on the two ends of the phone and then wait like 5 minutes till it connects. And then it beeps and then it hums and then finally it sends and another 5 minutes and it goes. And I want to make sure I had time to do that. And he goes, oh, yeah, no problem. Well, the one thing I didn't count on was Rocky not winning that game. Because when Quincy won the game, now we got a different kind of Coach Reed that wants to get out of Quincy as fast as he can. And so I'm sitting in the press room, and I'm almost done because the outcome was determined much before the fourth quarter had ended. And so I've got like some touch, and I'd like to interview, you know, Coach Reed and finish the story. And he goes, we got to go now. And I said, but no, we got to go now. And so I knew they were going to stop at Kentucky Fried Chicken in Quincy. And I knew that. And I said, well, there's my opportunity. I said, I'll write that last paragraph on the bus. I'll ask Coach Reed a quick question, put it in, and I'll be done. So, yes, my story was done by the time we hit KFC. We get into KFC. I go to their manager there. I ask to use their phone. She says yes. And it's not one of those coupler phones. It's got, you know, something else on there that makes me not be able to send my story. And so then what do? So I use their phone. I call back to the office and I said, I have no story. I said, I have a story, but I can't get it to you. There's no way I can get it to you. Well, can you read it to us? No, that bus is boarding in like 2 minutes. As soon as that extra crispy's done, we're out of here. And so that's, you know, I came close to crying that night. But I did swear, Jim, that I would never, ever ride a bus.
Did he ever ask you to ride the bus? No one. Man.
There's been a couple offers, and I've declined every time. I don't care what. You know, now I can take a hotspot with me, and I can send it on. Times have changed that way. If I had that hotspot back then, I'd never be able to have this story.
Yeah, well, and the other thing is that, I mean, that when you talk about the coupler system, I mean, that's kind of their original World Wide Web of the internet, of how you transmit.
I wish I still had those. So, you know what? The old Radio Shack and
Model 100. Rotary phone. What are you talking about? And that's the one thing, you know, because I'd like to get your observation. And I know being in the business for 25 years with broadcast media, you know, for me, you know, digital media is really a double-edged sword. We've kind of, you know, I'm guilty of it. I've conditioned our audience to go to Twitter, to go to Facebook, to go to .com.
Social media is very strong.
You try to go, well, what, you know, they'll say I read it on WRMJ.com or I heard it on WRMJ.com, and you'll say, well, why aren't you saying you heard it on the radio? And it's the same thing with print media. A lot of people say, well, I go to the online version of it. And, you know, I'm still old school in the fact that I kind of like the way it was. Yeah. But then I'm conditioned myself to say, man, what would I do without digital media access?
Right. I mean, really, it's one relying on the other. And I don't think a lot of people realize how much digital and social media rely on the print product or the radio product. Without the latter, the digital will struggle to come up with valid news. And even right now, I struggle with the validity of things that I read on digital media. You know, someone writes a blog, anyone could write a blog. It could be the guy that I refused to hire 5 years ago that's now writing a blog saying this and that, and I'm thinking, okay, he couldn't write his way out of paper bag then. How is he going to have everybody believing what he's writing now? So to me, I've always maintained a trust in the print product because I've worked for it for so long that it's just ingrained in me. I know what we have to do. And do we make mistakes? Sure. Everybody may. We're humans. We're not, you know, computers. And computers aren't going to write the stories, yeah. You know. But it's a changed world, and I don't know where it's going to go, you know, even 3 to 5 years from now. I mean, I always thought, they said newspapers outlasted, you know, when television came, they said newspapers, radio, newspapers, and then radio, newspapers are still strong. And even when the digital era came in, newspapers are still strong, but as you know, it relies on advertising to keep going, and that's, you know, people look at that online and it's tougher to sell. It really is. It's tougher to sell, whether it's for radio or for newspaper.
You broaden your audience with the digital media presence, but you don't necessarily equate that to broadening the ad revenue.
Right.
That's the difficult equation to deal with, whether it's print or broadcast journal.
And there was a time, I mean, we've at the Argus and Dispatch have waffled on this one way or the other. Do you give it away free? Do you charge for them to read your online?
It's everybody's issue, really.
Yeah. You know? And you know, we attach online at the time, an online, QC Online, rights way if you had a subscription to the paper, so it's a, you know, a decision I'm glad I don't have to make, but it's really tough because people have access to news one way or the other, whether it's believable news or not, on, you know, whatever avenue you want to go online.
Well, but for me, back what you said, it's about street cred for me, you know, of where I'm going to consume my product. Now I know that Nestler's going to be there, McCarowitz, Duckett, or whatever. Yeah. You have to be there,
right?
You know what I'm saying?
And we are there.
Yeah, I know.
Yes.
That's why you get the street cred for, you know, not only covering the metro area, but, you know, the great job you do covering the rural schools out this way. And the way you get that, I say street cred. You're there.
Well, and
that's the difference from the online blog where maybe you're hit and miss there.
Right.
You can write from a darkened room.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
Right. Well, the one aspect of the digital media that I think is greatly improved, but makes it so much tougher for us, and that is the instantaneous news that you can get that you couldn't get before. You can go down to Twitter, and if I want to find out the score of how Mercer County is doing against Rock Ridge, we've got somebody there who's updating as they go. And the schools that have the Twitter access, I'm able to, with my laptop, sit at press row and keep score and update often. Like from last night, UT Moline, I think I was updating as much as I was keeping score. But, you know, we like to hear the appreciation from people that follow, and we get that.
That's the great point you bring up about conditioning yourself, and you always have to be careful. Am I worrying more about
true
the digital media,
right,
or am I worrying about what I'm supposed to be doing,
right,
whether it's radio? And I catch myself doing that so many times. I'm like, where you have to pause and say, what are you here for? Are you here for Twitter, or are you here for broadcasting the game?
But now, written into our job description is that we're there for both.
Yeah, I
mean, so really, it really is a tougher situation for for writers now, for sports writers now, than it ever was back in the 80s, 90s, even the early 2000s. And now we're fortunate at the Dispatch Argus and able to attach some of our copy and some of our online digital stuff to advertising, which is crucial.
Yeah.
So now we can't forget because somebody's paying for that information.
Do you miss the old days, though, how it used to be done? When I say the old days, 1970s, which to me is not the old days, but I mean...
That's the before you were born days.
Well, 1967.
Okay, close enough. I was just getting started in my business, journalism business. But do I miss it? Guys, that's such a tough question, Jim, because I really like the challenge. I'm a multitasker, and I really love the challenge of updating on Twitter, keeping score, writing a story in 15 to 20 minutes after the game, and having it be mistake-free, as close to mistake-free as possible. Take a lot of pride in that. But it was so much easier back when you didn't have to worry about any of that. But that said, I used to hate going on the road. I covered Allam and Down, and this wasn't that long ago. Somebody played in Pekin. And then they played down the highway at some, who was the coach that didn't last long? It started with Z, Allman. McCarowitz will know it because.
Yeah, I know.
Just kind of. But anyway, they played down there, and it was like a 2.5 hour drive. So I covered Peak and went down there. And of course, there was no way to send a story from down there. And back then, you didn't need the couplers, but you needed an internet connection that nobody seemed to have. Now McDonald's has them all.
Yeah.
You go to McDonald's and bam, you got an internet connection there. But back then, McDonald's didn't have it either. And the only place we found that you could have it was a Holiday Inn. And, of course, you couldn't Google Holiday Inn.
Yeah.
You couldn't, you know, check your cell phone and find out where a Holiday Inn was. But as I'm driving from Pekin to the parts unknown, I noticed that there's a Holiday Inn on that road down there. And so on the way back, sure enough, that's where I stop and got to go to the front desk and ask them for their password. You know, here, I'm with a newspaper. You know, I'm not going to register as a guest, but I want you to be nice and let me write in your lobby. So that's what we did.
Really?
And I got a funny story from Terry Duckett, who I know you.
Oh, yeah, he's around all the time. He's a legend out here.
Legend, yes, he is a legend. And he was the same way. He would always look for that Holiday Inn.
You're kidding me.
But everybody did.
Yeah.
But back then, McDonald's had already had Wi-Fi. They had added Wi-Fi, but he wasn't aware. And so we would always look for the Holiday Inn. And so we went to Jacksonville and covered the Tanner Williams game? Was that where
that's
was?
The bowl where they lost in the last couple of seconds.
That's,
Winchester West Central.
Exactly. That's the game that he and I went to cover. He did the play by, he did the gamer. I did the color piece, the column. And afterwards I said, you know, he's all worried. Because Jacksonville, where are we going to find a Holiday Inn? And I said, well, Tico, I said, we don't need to worry about it. There's a McDonald's right across the street. And that was the first time that he'd ever sent using a McDonald's Wi-Fi. And from then on, it was like, okay, whew, like big relief.
Well, and I just remember, was it Zork or something like that?
Zork, that was what it was.
Right. I win the trivia question.
Yes. you win a 45.
Yeah, you get that. You know, for me, I like the old school way. For me, I've only been doing it since 1990, but that's old school for a lot of people. And one of my favorite stories here is John Hoshite's brother lives in Bloomington Normal. Well, before the IHSA had the impressive digital media presence that they had, when they used to release the IHSA pairings, I remember the one year when we started doing the IHSA football playoff pairings when Alito got rolling in the 90s, John's brother is down at the IHSA offices getting the pairings.
And calling them.
Yeah, and giving them.
That's
giving
nice. Them,
it's Tremont playing so-and-so in the first round. And now it's changed so much. And that's one of the things that kind of bugs me is I want the media ownership of the product where we get it and not everybody else can get it. You know what I'm saying?
And that does not exist now.
Oh, I know.
You're now... that whole first with the news thing. Yeah. How do you know who's first? Because if I put some, and obviously you're going to get something on social media before you get it in print.
Yeah.
Or even before you get it on the air. But how? Who's to say who had it? Unless, and who really cares?
Well, yeah, but it just bothers me that everybody else gets it and not the, you know, maybe that's just my elite media, whatever, coming out of me where, but like, the, a situation like that, everybody gets it, basically.
But you're 100% right in the pride that you had in having a scoop.
Yeah, exactly right.
Was immense. And really, you're still there, but you lose a little, you lose a lot of the pride that you have because somebody's going to steal it. And throw it off as their own in a matter of seconds after you put it up there. Yeah. Because now you're told that you need to put it on social media first, because that way we are allegedly first, you know, or we are first, but that's our proof that we are. So, you know, online. But the only way you have is that little time stamp that's up there on the story.
Yeah, that's right. All right, got a lot to talk about with Mark Nestler with the Argus Dispatch. Been in the newspaper business
342 years.
He's got the ink stained hands to show it, man. So we'll take a break. I want to talk about some IHSA stuff with Mark, and we'll do that right after this.